You're listening to a Rig Train Masterclass, supported by the Radio Independence Group and Creative Skillset, independent training for the UK radio production industry.
It is about capturing that moment. I think you also need a good deal of luck, because the better the sporting event, the better your commentary will probably be. So Ian Robertson was right there at the moment. We're going to hear one or two other examples a little bit later on. It does help if you have a great sporting event unfolding in front of you. You should be able to do your job and describe what is going on. And it is the drama of the event quite often which is drawing the listener towards the radio. They can't move because they don't know what the outcome is going to be. Sometimes the real test of a commentator is when something is very one-sided or a bit dull. How are you still going to make sure that your listeners are hanging on your every word? And that's when you need a lot of commentary skills. Swimming is a very interesting sport in terms of the commentators they use, in terms of the number one voice who is describing the race as it unfolds. In television, Andy Jameson is used, who's a former Olympic medalist himself, and he has really had to learn the broadcasting skills of the number one commentator, which on TV is about telling you who is in the lead, who is second, who is third, because we can see so much of what is unfolding. In radio, the swimming commentator is a chap called John Hunt, who's actually a horse racing commentator by profession and has had to learn swimming, but does a fantastic job, again, at describing exactly who is leading from who, distances involved in terms of A leads B by a couple of metres or by 5 metres, and does a really fantastic job at building the excitement towards the finish. The landscape of radio commentary has changed appreciably. The audience's listening habits have changed a lot. People nowadays aren't necessarily either sitting round a radio, they may not even be driving in a car. Sometimes they've just got their headphones in their phone, and that is how they are listening to radio commentary. Their attention span is shorter. The way that the commentary takes place on radio is different, in that a lot more, you know, ex-professionals and top-level players are there to spread their insight. And yet, despite all of that changing landscape, the basic skills of the number one radio sports commentator are pretty much the same. First of all, you need to have a great voice. A voice that is instantly distinctive and always very clear. The radio commentator, as I said earlier, you benefit from being able to describe great moments. Sometimes you've got to be able to still be interesting and entertaining when not much is happening in front of you. And on the radio, that requires the ability to paint pictures, to give people colour, to provide images in their mind that can let their imaginations run wild. I just want to talk very briefly just about the sort of the mental process that goes on. When you start broadcasting and you're not sure of what you should be doing, a lot of people will give you advice, and that advice lodges in your mind. And when you are, that is not necessarily the most helpful thing when you are a sports commentator, because if you are at an event and you are watching something unfold in front of you, you've got to be reasonably instinctive. You can't afford to say to yourself, now, what was I told I need to do here? You don't want any clutter in your mind. Your mind has got to be free so that you can watch what is unfolding in front of you and describe it in the best way you can. And it will normally compromise your levels of enthusiasm and excitement as well if you're worried about what sort of person you're meant to be. You want to be instinctive and, in a way, let it all hang out, remembering that you still need to be clear. That's the most important thing, because as we heard with your man earlier on, when you get too excited and hysterical, it compromises the clarity of what you're saying. And one last thing, Ellie and I worked for a long time with Cliff Morgan, one of the great Welsh fly halves of all time, who became a peerless broadcaster for the BBC. And he had one very simple way of describing great sports broadcasters. He said, the best sports broadcasters, I can see their teeth. And when you say, you know, what do you mean? You can see their teeth. He said, because they're smiling at the microphone. They're enjoying what they're doing. And actually, the two next to me here, they both, I can see their teeth really when I'm listening to them on the radio. They both sound enthusiastic and they both sound as if they really want to be at the events they're at. There are some broadcasters who can be inflammatory for the sake of, and I think they shine very brightly in the short term and eventually disappear. In terms of football in particular, or team sports, trying not to be too partisan is an advantage. You want to, as Kevin said, you know, retain some credibility, because it gets to the heart of who are you broadcasting to? You're broadcasting to the whole country. And therefore, it is important to make sure that you don't want to alienate anybody. I think with Rebecca, when you are covering Adam Peaty swimming for gold for Britain, well, hold on a minute. We're going, this is the British Broadcasting Corporation. That's where we've done most of our broadcasting over the years. I don't think anybody's going to hold it against you. I think if you're screaming at the microphone, we've done this, we've done that all the time, it can get a little grating. But a little bit of partisanship and under those circumstances is fine. We mentioned Andy Jameson earlier in TV swimming coverage. He is quite rare in terms of former Olympic swimmer who is now the number one describer of what's going on. And you mentioned Ed Smith. I mean, Ed Smith does the number one commentary role, again, the ball by ball. And that, it is a completely new skill and craft from the, what we would call the colour man, or the person just providing the insight. It's a hard thing to learn, and, you know, he's done remarkably well to do what he's done so far. Again, the professional athlete has the advantage, as I said, of being coached from the very start and knowing the importance of prep or training. And all broadcasters, even the ones who make it look remarkably straightforward and simple, have done a lot of time prepping to make sure they know their subject, know what could happen, how might they react, not rehearsing particular lines, but just making sure that they are ready and on top of their subject. The dynamics of an interview are very important in terms of they are mini relationships that you have with somebody. And clearly, if you haven't done many interviews, there is that worry about what happens if my interviewee stops speaking and I haven't thought of my next question. And you can get those screen wipe moments where your head just empties and you don't know what to ask. If possible, the prompt needs to be as small and as insignificant as possible, so that it's just in the palm of your hand. Because the moment that you're looking at a big flapping sheet of paper, it doesn't send a great message to whoever you're interviewing that you have real authority. Sometimes you may need to butt in during an interview just to make it a bit more, change the pace of an interview, which is sometimes so important. Because if an interview just goes in with question, long answer, question, long answer, it's just sort of very one-paced. Sometimes you may need to butt in and just sort of chivvy a guest along. I was at London 2012 at the Royal Artillery Barracks, having to describe live on 5 Live Peter Wilson winning gold for Britain in the double trap shooting. Now, shooting and radio are not necessarily natural bedfellows, and I had to think quite carefully beforehand about how was I going to describe the moment if Peter Wilson was going to be successful. And he was brilliant throughout the competition. It came down, he had his last two clays that were pulled. He needed to destroy one of those last two. But you had to stop yourself not sounding like Alan Partridge and saying, bang, it's there, it's there. So I thought carefully about how I would describe it. I would say, I'm probably biased, shooting is a difficult sport to describe on the radio. Mainly because there's no sort of warning that it's going to happen, if you know what I mean. That's not well explained, but, you know, trigger is pulled, clay either is destroyed or not, and you don't see the bullet or the cartridge making its way towards the target. There's no time. When somebody's having a shot from 25 yards into the top corner, you can see it. When you're 10 metres away from winning Olympic gold, you can see it in the pool. Shooting is quite hard. Always remembering who your audience is critical. If you are commentating about Manchester United against Liverpool and Rooney gets the ball and you're on Five Live, 99% of the audience know that Manchester United are in possession of the ball and they are moving towards the opposition goal. If you are commentating on a team that is not Manchester United and say not even in the top six in the Premier League, a little bit further down, suddenly the names to a national audience do not have an immediate resonance. It quite often will be, just say it's a Women's Super League match and Lucy Bronze is coming down the right, you will say, here comes Lucy Bronze for Man City or for City, so that at least we've got an idea that it's Manchester City going that way. Some commentators feel, well, I know it's Lucy Bronze of Manchester City and I'll just say Bronze because that's the way John Motson does it on the telly. But actually, it's about understanding who your audience is, how much knowledge have they got, so that you're actually making it clear to them what is going on. In terms of football commentary, it requires miles on the clock. You've really got to be able to do plenty of matches to establish that strong link between your eyes and your mouth so that what you see comes straight out of your mouth and that there aren't any filters along the way where you're thinking, did I really see that? Did she just hit her? You've got to be able to describe things like that immediately. And they're coming through, but it's taken far, far too long. Test match special as an example this summer. Again, just to back up the points made earlier, when bowler is coming up to deliver ball, you have to be there describing the action, otherwise you are not doing your primary role. However, they had a lunch interval where they discussed, I'm going to show myself up terribly, the film out at the moment, the cricket film is called, I don't know, anyhow, it is meant to be a very important... Death of a Gentleman. It's meant to be a very important film. I look forward to seeing it down the line. I haven't had a chance so far. But they discuss that at length for half an hour, and that makes serious, serious allegations about the International Cricket Council, how it's run, the power brokers within cricket, basically that it is run by England, India and Australia, and the rest of the countries don't really get much of a look in, and all sorts of funding that should be spread around the world of cricket is not. And they discussed that in detail for half an hour, and it was to quote the BBC, a robust debate. It was, with Jonathan Agnew having to try to put the ICC's point of view, if only just to challenge the makers of the film. So there is time, as Rebecca said, providing it's done, you know, in the right moment and you've got the airtime to do it. I do think it's beholden on all of us involved in radio and TV, though, to keep in touch with the next generation and the next two generations coming through, really, in my case. So I am always observing my son and how he listens or how he watches. And I always ask him at the end of it, you know, what did you take from that? Was that good? You know, what was the message there? Just to see whether we are still able to communicate properly. Because clearly I grew up at a time when there were two football matches a week where you would see 10 minutes or 20 minutes on Match of the Day on a Saturday afternoon. That was it. You saw the odd live, you know, you saw the FA Cup final and the odd England game, but that was it. Nowadays, people can watch it everywhere and they can stream it everywhere. And therefore, you know, it is much, much more competitive. People are listening or watching on the hoof, and you've got to just make sure that you are in touch with listening trends and how people consume.
You've been listening to a Rig Train Masterclass, supported by the Radio Independence Group and Creative Skillset, independent training for the UK radio production industry.